Okay, our next presenter is Ms. Cheryl Valco. Ms. Valco is the Program Manager for the Physical Activity Policy Research Network, and she coordinates the day-to-day activities of the network and participates in the data collection, analysis, and dissemination of many of the network research studies, including the development of toolkits that will be discussed in her presentation. She has a Master's of Public Health degree with a concentration in behavioral science and epidemiology. She's also a registered dietitian, and she will be talking with you about the development of the toolkits to promote physical activity, collaboration of research and practice. Cheryl?
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking the time to be here today. I am impressed with the number of people that have shown up. I was pretty sure I was going to be talking to an empty room, being in the last day, in the last session. So I'm happy to have some faces to look at as I talk about the development of toolkits to promote physical activity. So I just want to start off by acknowledging Dr. Amy Eiler and Alicia Montega, who were integral in the work that I'll be talking about today, and then the support from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and I have no relationships to disclose. So just to give you a brief overview of what I'm going to be touching on today, I'm first just going to briefly talk about research dissemination and really what it is, what's working, what's not working with research dissemination, and why it's important. And then I'll go into a little more detail about the physical activity plan toolkit and template, and then implications and next steps. So typically a research cycle goes a little bit something like this. Somebody comes up with a great idea, and then they apply for a grant, and they take hours and hours to do that, and then they get rejected probably from the grant, and then they apply for more funding, and they probably get rejected again, and maybe again. And then eventually, after they do get funding, they conduct the research, and finally disseminate the results. And I don't know if any of you can guess here the number one way that most people disseminate the results. Journals. Journals. Lots and lots and lots and lots of journals. There are actually over 25,400 active scholarly peer-reviewed journals worldwide, which is kind of an amazing number. It took me a little while to find this, but I was curious as to how many journals actually exist. That results in approximately 1.5 million journal articles published every year. That's in lots of different languages, and it's worldwide, but that's a lot of data to weed through. And it's actually been increasing by about 3 to 3.5% every year for the last two centuries. And you know, I'm a researcher, and I think that journals are definitely a necessary part of that research cycle, and it's a central place where you can deposit information, you can find out detailed information about a study and the methods and all of those things. But I think the biggest problem is that often the research stops there. It doesn't go any further than a journal. It sits in the journal. It collects dust if it's printed, or it kind of gets lost in PubMed or whatever other research place that you're looking into. And it also doesn't reach the people that could use it, so the practitioners and the people that often work in public health departments or in community organizations who may not have the funding to be able to actually download the articles, or they don't have access to them. So, you know, obviously I think they're important, but I think it's just one part of where dissemination should go. So this study, this is actually two different studies. They were conducted by Dr. Ross Brownson at Washington University in St. Louis, where I work. And the first study looked at, on the left-hand side, the 511 leaders of local public health agencies and asked them, how do you learn about research findings? And you can see that the number one way that they learn about research findings is through professional associations. And then seminars, workshops, email alerts, and journal articles. And then a second study was done where they asked 266 public health researchers how they perceive they most effectively reach practitioners. And the number one way that they think that they get to practitioners through or get their research to practitioners is through journal articles, and then face-to-face meetings, media interviews, and press releases. I don't know, there might be something that sticks out to you here in this table, that researchers find that journal articles are really important, but to practitioners, not that much. So this has led some other researchers to start trying to figure out other ways to disseminate research, and this is actually Janine Harris. This was a news article that came across my email last year, and she has been doing a lot of research with Twitter and with other forms of social media, but mostly she's focused on Twitter, and she did a study looking at local health departments find Twitter effective in spreading diabetes information. So she's starting to dig into some other ways besides journal articles to spread information. And I think that there's a lot of other ways that people are spreading information. It's not just Twitter. You'll notice a lot of health departments and places have Facebook pages, LinkedIn accounts, YouTube videos, Instagram pictures, or even TEDx presentations. So there's been a variety of different places where this is kind of a new, even though these social media aspects don't feel new because almost everybody has a Facebook account now, it's kind of a newer thing for researchers to actually use them to disseminate information. It's still journal articles. And there's also been a push to, I'm sure some of you have probably noticed, a push to create other types of research dissemination through toolkits, through guides, through handbooks, and there's also a big kind of blow up around infographics everywhere. There's infographics about lots of different things. And it's just, there's been a push to have some sort of visually appealing way to show research. And, you know, I don't know about you, but I would much rather read one of these and find out the gist of something than to look through a 10-page article where, you know, most of the time you may just briefly read the abstract. And this is a great thing, types of tools where people can actually hand them to policymakers and other people in the community that they can use to help get their cause across. So this brings me to the physical activity plan toolkit and template, and these are things that we created through the Physical Activity Policy Research Network that I work with. But before I get into a little bit more about those, I'm just going to start with the background of why we created these in the first place. You might be familiar with the National Physical Activity Plan. It was launched in 2010, and it is one of the largest and most comprehensive physical activity plans that exists. And it's a set of policies, programs, and initiatives that are centered around 8 different sectors. And those are things like public health, transportation, mass media. And the purpose, the overall broad purpose, is really to increase physical activity levels of all Americans. So at the same time that the National Physical Activity Plan was launched, we were conducting a study through PAPRN, the state plan analysis, where we were looking across the country at 43 state obesity, nutrition, or chronic disease-related plans, and then compared and contrasted the contents of those. And we found a lot of great things that the plan had, but we also found a lot of things that they lacked. And since we are a physical activity policy network, we were focusing specifically on the physical activity aspects of these plans to see what they contained. So most of the plans lacked needs assessment data. Most of them were missing SMART overarching objectives, so the specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, time-bound objectives. A lot of them didn't have an involvement of active living-oriented groups. They were missing minority targets, and a lot of them were missing evaluation plans just in general, and then many of them didn't have physical activity framework or a focus on changing physical activity infrastructure, so things like parks and trails. So our results were published in, you guessed it, a journal. And it was titled Opportunity Meets Planning. It was led by Dr. Amy Eiler, and it's in the Journal of Physical Activity and Health, if anybody wants to look it up and find out more details about the study. But we really didn't want this information to stop there because we felt like We had interesting information that states and communities could use, and we figured they probably weren't going to be that interested in reading this article. Just to give you a quick why, so you might be asking yourself, so we looked at all these 43 state obesity, nutrition, and chronic disease related plans. Why should we push to have physical activity standalone plans? And the big reason is that it can increase visibility at the political level and allow stakeholders to follow common objectives and strategies, so it can really help people to kind of hone in on what they want to be doing and all come together across one thing and look at this plan rather than everybody kind of doing separate things in their community. Assign roles and responsibilities so it can make sure that things get done and be more strategic about things, and then highlighting evidence to support recommended strategies. So it can help create an evidence base for why you actually have this plan and why these strategies are important. So since we didn't want to just stop with the journal article that we published, we actually reached out to a bunch of different practitioners and said, this is the research that we did. We think it's really interesting, and we think that there are some places that are interested in creating physical activity plans, but how could this be of help to you? What could we do that would be useful? And we actually heard two different things. One was, we'd really love a toolkit, something that has everything that we need to put in a physical activity plan and have all the resources that we need, links to those resources, and we'd also love examples from other communities that have created them, something that can show us examples and give us a guide, because there's not a lot out there that exists, and so it's hard for people to know where to look. And then the other thing was a template, and this one kind of came to me as a surprise, but at the same time I could see why people would want it. They said, we don't want to create this from scratch. You know, this is a big thing. We're all really busy. We would love it if you created something that was kind of fill in the blank. And this one took a while for us to develop because it was kind of hard to figure out how to create a template that can be used across the country for all different types of groups. But in the end, that's what we ended up doing, is creating a toolkit and then a template. And pretty much based on what people were asking for. So just to briefly go over what's in the toolkit, I'm not going to go through all these steps, but the whole toolkit is based around these six steps. And within each step, there are tools and resources around that topic, and then there's also examples from other communities. So, you know, the six steps are building a coalition and conducting a community assessment, developing goals and objectives, select intervention strategies, then create an evaluation plan and write the plan. And anybody that comes in can start wherever they want, and obviously there are going to be some communities that already have amazing coalitions and they've already conducted a community assessment, but you know, they're kind of at step three or something. So it's just a toolkit to allow them to step in wherever they want and start and look at the information. And this is just an example of what's in, you know, for example, step one, the building a coalition. This is just one page. There's many pages of this section, but, you know, the types of tools and resources are creating and maintaining coalitions and partnerships, the community toolbox, and from the community toolbox, and then from the Prevention Institute, developing effective coalitions and eight-step guides. So it's a place that people are interested in building a coalition. They are at that place where they can find a whole bunch of really great tools that already exist. And we give a, you know, an introduction, but then we also give a brief overview of what that tool is, the link to it, and sometimes a little bit more information. But it gives them a place to go to find that. And then the template we created, I don't expect you to be able to read this at all, but I just wanted to show kind of what exists. So all the black type and font is kind of suggested wording. So it's just kind of an overview of things. And then in the red font is where people can actually put in information about the name of their state or community. And then there are, as you can see, there's some bullet points down there that are blank. So we give, you know, ideas about, you could fill this in here and put these this information about your community. This is not a one-size-fits-all at all, and I've definitely made that clear to people that, you know, you can't expect it to work for every place and every page isn't going to work for you, but it gives people a starting point, and I think people appreciate that, to just have something to start with. And then also on the right side, you can see we even just have, you know, setups for it. Insert a picture of your coalition here, so giving people ideas about things that they could put in there. And then we also have objectives tables for each of those six steps, and it gives people, or not for the six steps, actually that's in the toolkit, for the, we have eight sectors that were based on the National Physical Activity Plan, so the things like the public health sector and the media and transportation. So we have, under each of those eight sectors, we have activities and strategy ideas, partners for them to think about who will be responsible, thinking about time, by when will this be accomplished, how much can you spend on this, and then also gives ideas about indicators. And I think a lot of people struggle with the evaluation part of these types of things. So we give ideas about, connected to the specific strategies, here's some evaluation indicators. And all of this that we created is actually uploaded in a Word document, so it's not a PDF. So people can go in, download it as a Word document, and change everything that they want to, and change it for their own community so that they actually can adapt it to what works best for them. So the guide is available at our PAPRN website. If you don't want to write that whole URL down, you can just Google PAPRN. And on the page, you can see that there's the things at the top column. If you go under Tools and Resources, you can find it pretty easily. So in summary, dissemination is important, and I think we all know that, but I think especially dissemination of research outside of just journal articles, the 1.5 million of them that get published every year, thinking about what you can do with research outside of that, and what will people actually look at, and what will they use. And work, if you're a researcher, working with practitioners, going out and asking people, how can we help? Is this interesting to you? And if it is, what can we create? And if you're a practitioner, not being too shy to ask a researcher if you do see something that comes across the media or your email box and ask, you know, would you be willing to create something else that we would find helpful? Because I think a lot of researchers are thinking in that way. And obviously, I can't guarantee that the researcher's ever going to respond to you. But I think, you know, our team, at least at Washington University, is really focused on that, and we would respond and say, you know, that's a really great idea. Let's talk more about this. So just thinking about, you know, connecting more with researchers. And then checking out our toolkit and template if you find that interesting. And then our next steps are to gather some indicator data. So looking a little bit more at the number of downloads that we get, the use of the tool, the number of new, if any, physical activity plans that have developed out of this tool, and then expanding and targeting dissemination. So we've already done some social media dissemination and talking about this, and then we've done some webinars with some national groups of practitioners, but expanding that further so people can be aware of it. And that's it. Thank you. Yeah, you know, I don't know if they are overwhelmed. I agree. I feel like there are a lot of toolkits, but I think it depends on what people are interested in, because there's a million toolkits out there, but if you're really only focused on creating a state plan, you wouldn't have been able to find one a year ago, you know? So I think people use them, but that's part of why we want to look at some data around this. So I have been having trouble trying to get Google Analytics set up on my computer so I can look at the website to find out how many people have downloaded our actual tool, but I think, you know, looking at that, I mean, you could always suggest creating a toolkit for something and then, you know, trying to evaluate, do people actually use it, or trying to see if there's other people that have done some evaluation on that.
And I also really appreciate that slide you had where the journal article was the bottom and the top bullet. That's a picture.
Oh, good. Thanks.
You had one of your steps was developing coalitions, mm-hmm.
Like the specific tools and resources that we had within the toolkit? Is that what you mean?
Or recommendations, just things that are in the toolkit that have been particularly useful?
I haven't actually heard anything very specific about specific aspects of the toolkit. I have had somebody from one state say that they actually wrote a grant based on it and are trying to disseminate it throughout the entire state to get a whole bunch of communities to use it. So far, I just heard really good feedback that they were excited about it, but I did not hear, they didn't tell me specifically about anything within, specific areas. But I would agree with you that coalitions are definitely difficult, and that's why we have all those specific tools that are already evidence-based and made by other organizations that you can download to try to figure that out. I would say less of the very long-term outcomes because I think those are harder to measure. I definitely think that people should be focusing on that as well, but we just gave examples in the objective tables. So we have a whole introduction section in there that basically says, this is not a one-size-fits-all type of document. It should be, you should come up with a lot of your own indicators that go along with the strategy, but we just heard people say we need some examples. So it's not meant to be it's not meant to fit every evaluation type of thing that they're doing because there's so much that they could be looking at in their community, and it's going to vary by every community. But they're really just meant to get them thinking about evaluation and things that they could measure. I would say more. It's a mixture of things. It's a mixture of some process and some actual more just numbers related to the strategies because it's across 8 different sectors that we gave examples. So it varies depending on what the type of strategy that it is. It is. So Dr. Ross Bronson, who did those 2 studies that I showed that were next to each other, he is a very strong advocate of translation and dissemination of research, and I think that's something he's really passionate about. I truly believe that our university is probably doing things different than a lot of other places, and that a lot of other places don't feel that strongly about it, but I hear it all the time when we're working on something. Well, are you already thinking about dissemination? How are you going to disseminate? It's got to be outside the journal article. Are you creating a plan? And I don't hear that from a lot of other places. And I definitely think that it's a big problem, but I don't have any solutions I find it kind of overwhelming sometimes with, you know, how the structure is set up to reward people to get peer-reviewed journal articles and not much about. But, you know, we're trying to start change small through our place and, you know, encourage it in other places.
I also had a follow-up question. So most of the journals that are desired to be published in are not open access.
Yeah.
Do you have any public health journals that you would recommend that are open access?
Hmm. You know, I would have to think about that. I could get back to you. There's a lot of different ones, but off the top of my head, I don't remember which ones are open access. I mean, I know through NIH grants, we actually are required to pay for open access now. Everything has to be. So some of that stuff requires you to, and it doesn't matter what journal it's in.
One final quick question again, right here.
Actually, that was my point. It's not necessarily the practitioners are not interested and would learn if they had access.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that's a good idea.
Well, just in answer to this, I don't think